This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 362. I am Lisa Sheps, joined by Nicole Shiro. You're listening to us on KOOP Hornsby Austin, 91.7 FM, streaming live at koop.org. Stick with us. Step out of It is Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. On the show today, we have Vortex Repertory Company and their show, Privacy Settings, and also the Penfold Theater Company and their show, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Clybourne Park. And of course, we'll have lively discussions in the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, London, Paris, Germany, Russia, Asia, and the Pacific Ocean. Stay with us. I love you.
I love you,
Nicole Shiro.
Well, I love you, Lisa Sheps.
We had a little bit of a bumpy start today because we were a little late in coming. Get in here, Michelle. We were a little late in getting into the studio, but we persevered.
We did.
Yeah. So
and we switched mics up on each other.
We switched mics.
Did a little bit of the numbering issue. But
it's crazy because you're learning how to operate this whole crazy board, and we're doing it. So that is my way of checking in with you.
Well, hello. Well, I'm. Both songs came on, so far, so good.
They did. Wonderful. I want to thank Tracy for another wonderful remix. And actually, so welcome back, Tracy. He's been gone for 3 weeks.
I know. I was about to say, not only that, he's back.
He's back
he's
and
back
better than ever.
Tracy Schultz.
No, that can only be one person. You know that, right?
Shep.
Try it again. It's Dustin Struhal. That's who it is. So let's introduce who's here with us. We have Heather Barfield. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Lisa.
We have Nathan Portershaver.
You got it.
Got the nice name right. Karen Jambon.
Hello.
Jambon.
However you want to say it.
Jambon. You know, I'm going to stick with Jambon. I'm sorry.
Fine.
It's like I try and I just can't
she
do it.
She say Jambon.
Jambon. We're just going to keep you as
Jambon.
Keep you as French. Jarrett King, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Michelle Alexander, welcome
hey.
Back. Ryan Crowder, hi.
Hello.
And what's your name? Nathan Jerkin.
Best for last.
I'll say the best for last. And we're expecting Robert Matney to come at some point, are we not?
Yes.
Okay.
By which I
just
suppose
so you
I
know,
really mean best for last.
You're introducing everyone, and Tracy Schultz was behind with his hands, like inflatable wavy man.
Because he heard us say his name.
Yes, it was kind of funny.
Say my name. So I'm going to apologize to our listening audience right away. I am wearing brand new progressive glasses
Awesome.
They're nice looking, but
I
tell
political?
You.
Progressive political?
It is. These are lefty glasses, which I'm proud to wear, by the way. I had to pry their little arms off of a tree. They were hugging so hard. I'm just going to do the official weather report. It's damp. Okay. Some people say that moist is an ugly word to say. Do people
doesn't
feel that way?
It doesn't bother me, but it is funny.
No.
It doesn't bother me at all.
I just watched something on TV the other day about words people hate, and that was up
moist.
There, and I'm like, why is that word? There he is again, inflatable wavy man. I don't know why that word is so weird to people, but yeah.
I told the folks here that we have Tony ballots, and if you haven't gotten a Tony ballot, and Michelle, I don't think you got one, you need to fill that out, because what we do at this season of the year is have our guests fill out Tony ballots. We tally those up. Ryan, did you get one?
Yeah, I don't have a pen, though.
Okay, well, I do see
a lot of pens and studious folks. Everyone sat down when they got here.
I know. So we tally those up, and when the Tonys are awarded, we see how our guests do, and our guests have been pretty good over the years.
I know. So, well, this one's a hard year.
I'm wondering who's going to win Best Musical.
I mean, this is such a hard one. We may really be off the mark, Lisa.
So here's something I talked about last season or the season before, and I have a sort of an update on it. So you know that when you win a Tony, you're given, I think, two trophies. And then anybody else, like that cadre of 20 producers, have to buy their Tonys for $2,500 for the thing. I heard this rumor, and I was not able to. I Googled. I tried to find out. So if anybody in listening or if anybody here knows the truth about this, I am told that the trophies that you pay $2,500 for are not as good. Like the little thing doesn't spin.
Oh, and well, yeah.
And it's a different trophy.
You were just talking about how you have to spin.
You spin
the Tony.
So who's held a Tony in their hand? And I mean a Tony Award. Sorry, I should be very specific about that.
I'm out. Take me out.
Because I've done both.
Lisa Chef.
So that's bad. So when you hold that Tony, it's like the first thing you want to do is spin the little, I don't know what that is, a coin?
I don't know, but Lisa and Broadway director Benjamin Ensley Klein both
Director. That's his name, Broadway director.
Room, talking about how they've both spun Tonys, and I felt very unincluded.
Well, you know, not many people get it. And
no, you two were very excited about it. The
if
first
you're a
thing,
Tony spinner, you want to tell people.
Are those even legal in Texas?
Well, they are now. They didn't used to be. They had to be educational Tonys back then. So the grosses for the years have come in, and we broke major records. The Broadway season, Broadway, broke major records like this year. In the billions, over a billion, we're up 1.6%. That's people. $6.2 billion.
Yes.
That's billion with a B, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. That's amazing.
It's a good year for theater. Awesome. Yeah.
And the, oddly enough, and this I don't understand, the average ticket price has gone down.
Wow. Very good. Well, it's the ham for ham and all what, some of that.
Yeah, maybe. Hold on, I'm trying to read. I can't read with these glasses.
I was just about to say, you're not used to the new ones, are you? You have to wear them all the time.
Yes, we wear them all the time.
Oh.
So I thought that was pretty pretty interesting. Also, the weekly grosses came out, and last week, Hamilton, for the first time, grossed more than The Lion King.
Yep.
But now Lion King's back.
I was like, but you know Lion King will roar its way back to the top.
Well, I like to say Hakuna Matata on that one. You know? It's a circle of life that they say about that.
It's funny though when you still talk to people and you ask people who aren't theater people and you're like, what got you excited about theater? It's the darn Lion King,
yes,
man.
They love it.
It's the Lion King. And then they've seen everything since. Well, they didn't just stop there.
I'll tell you what, the Lion King changed a lot, even for me, because I'm one of those people that I'm a hypercritical. I don't like most things I go see. I went to the Lion King. I was fortunate enough to have house seats for the original cast. And I came in there with my arms crossed, not wanting to like it, and I was just...
I know!
I was a child again. And what was so great about it, at the time, this was... Everything was big mechanical, technological tricks, and it didn't have many.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite... Has everybody seen it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No. My favorite part is when he's... and I forgot, the boy, he's talking to his father in the pool, and in the back, it's total black, and all of a sudden, it just comes to life, and it's projected, and what they've got is all the people have a piece of shape on the end of a stick,
yeah,
and they come together as a screen and they project this guy's face on the screen, and because they're holding it on a stick, there's like slight movement, so it's like totally alive, and you go, it's so crazy and easy. It's so beautiful.
The stampede was my moment.
Yeah.
Hmm? It's the Indonesian puppetry that Taimur went to study. I mean, it's Wayang Kulit for, of course, Western audiences and Western eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. It was.
It's beautifully appropriated.
Like, it is. Yes.
Have no problem. Appropriate away.
But it's just, it's so cool to hear. It's still, I just had a conversation random, and it still comes off people's mouth as the thing that really changed folks. So.
Yeah, I think you might be right. It changed an era, and it certainly brought in the era of Disney.
Yes.
Because I think that was the first Disney, and then now they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I believe it really harkened in the beginning of the physical change of Times Square, because Disney really changed.
It did. And my friend was the head financial for all of Disney theatrical productions.
VHF?
I got to work on, once they did started taking over all the theaters and cleaning up Times Square, they started doing the electric parade that they do at Disney World and Disneyland in the middle of Times Square to mark this whole cleaning up. It was pretty cool to watch that happen there.
That doesn't mix well with peep shows, does it?
Well, they've
no
been
more
gone.
Peep shows.
No more peep shows.
Yep, no more.
Wow. It's it's, I'm going to say puppet shows, but they're not all puppet shows, so that doesn't work. I wasn't quick enough.
Yeah, sometimes you can't be.
No.
Tuck Everlasting is closing
on Sunday. I'm not surprised by that.
Not surprising, but poor thing, I've heard really great things. That's got an incredible cast.
The set list.
It was just this season for musicals, there was no competition. Mm. And I'll hearken back to saying that... what's that called? Hamilton? Could have opened last season. Remember, they held off to be on this season. And it's like people are probably just...
I don't know if that would have saved Tuck Everlasting.
It might have. Who knows?
I don't know. I don't find the story that exciting or the original movie.
Didn't see it. Didn't see it. Yeah. Didn't... I'm like, I'm a blank page. I got, you know, to me, you know, it's called Everlasting, so you'd think. Yeah. I'm just saying.
The sets look beautiful.
Yeah, they do. The picture
really
of the Times is gorgeous.
So stunning that every time I'm like, darn, that looks really magical.
Yeah. And it was directed by Casey Nicholaw, speaking of Book of Mormon. Mm. And it had Carolee Carmello in it.
Love that Carolee.
I'm on my... Yeah. All right. She listens to the show, so I'm not going to say anything. but that's good. And you heard about Jake Gyllenhaal going into a concert version of Sunday in the Park?
Oh,
no. With George.
Always in the park with George. Really?
Yeah, he's doing a concert version. It was just announced today, and did I print it so I could tell you what date it is? Oh, I did. So for those of you who want to go, I believe the ticket prices are... it's either $2,500... $25,000 or $150,000.
Well, you know what, guys? Let me treat everyone. It's on me.
But it is
a better chance going to that than Hamilton. So right. I mean, at least you're getting bang
for
your buck.
It's produced by Jeanine Tesori, who was the composer for Fun Home, amongst others, who I will see in 2 weeks.
I was like, aren't you going soon?
I am.
Soon,
I'm
going
to see it in 2 weeks.
It's fun.
I cannot wait. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Did you see the original cast? Of course
I did.
You did.
Oh. Yeah.
So, and you know, she listens to the show. So Sydney Lucas is coming to Austin next month to shoot a series.
Oh.
And we need to get her on the show, don't you think?
Yes, you do.
I am in love with that girl. She is so good.
Maybe if we just say she's coming on the show, she'll find out and show up.
It's true. We'll get a cease and desist from her publicist. Stop saying that. But Jake Gyllenhaal came to theatrical fame last season when he did Little Shop for Encores Off... not Encores Off Center, Encores Encores, right?
I think it was Encores Encores. I think you are correct.
No, Off Center.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was. I like saying Encores. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, so never mind. We'll just say Encores. But good for old Jake Gyllenhaal.
I think it's great. You know, and Sunday in the Park with George is... Sunday in the Park is just a great show for a concert version that you can do so much with. So like that show.
I do not like
that's
that
fine.
Show.
That's fine. I love that
you know,
show.
I want to. I'm like all by myself. And I've never...
And she loves Sondheim.
I was never
which
able
crazy.
To... I do like Sondheim. I was ever able... I was never able to sit through... I never saw a staged version. I tried to watch the movie, which is the original cast, several times. I never made it to Act Two. And then Austin Shakespeare did it, and I had them on the show, and they sang some of the songs that I wasn't so familiar with, and I said, okay, I think I'm gonna like this. So I went, and I said, and Act Two, I just have one question about Act Two.
Why don't you ask it?
Well, that's sort of the question. Why? Why does Act Two of that show exist? It makes no sense. Somebody tell Robert Matney he can come on in.
Oh, my gosh.
So
that was just so funny.
Welcome, Robert.
You know, it's funny, and I do not like Mandy Patinkin, but I love that show. Yeah, he's like nails on a chalkboard to me. Nothing personally against him.
His voice can be...
But he has a mannerism when he sings. Do you ever watch him? He does this with his hands. I mean, nobody can see me out there, but totally. All
yeah,
the
he's
time.
Doing this, everybody.
Drives me
bananas. Let's do this in unison for our listening audience.
All right, yeah.
Okay, there we go. We all did it. So I saw him and Patti LuPone. Patti LuPone, that's her name.
That lady.
I saw him and Patti, and it wasn't crazy about that concert.
No.
They never looked at each other. They were individual.
Because he was too busy fiddling with his hands.
Uh-huh. He was too busy doing this.
He's like half flying, half deaf applause.
So here's an interesting thing. This just came out today. Spring Awakening is
today.
Up for the deaf today. Spring Awakening is up for a Tony. I don't know what exactly they're nominated for. Best Revival, amongst other things. Or just the one?
Yep. No, I think they had two or three.
I think they may have some actor and actress.
Yes.
So that's the Deaf West version, which closed back in January. Raise your hand if you had tickets to closing night's performance.
Lisa Sheps
did. Now raise your hand if you actually got to see it. No, there's the storm. No. And your theater closed.
Raise your hand if there was a blizzard.
No, it was the blizzard and your theater closed. So I really wanted to see that. But it's the Deaf West, for those that don't know, a company out of Los Angeles. They brought Big River to Broadway 4 or 5 years ago. They are a deaf theater company, and they do these sign language ASL interpreted shows. And they did that with Spring Awakening. It came to Broadway. And it's up for awards. So the cast, you know, when a show does a performance on the Tony Awards, they have to pay for it. They foot the bill. So if you can imagine this show, which was sort of a ragtag show, it started as a workshop. They didn't really expect it to go to Broadway when they started doing it. And a lot of performers are deaf performers. They don't live in L.A., not New York. And so to get them all back in, have them relearn numbers and reproduce it is sort of expensive. So they have a Kickstarter campaign to try, and it just, I think it went live today, to try to make money to get Spring Awakening to perform at the Tonys. And I'm going to say, you know, I can try to put a link on it if I find it, but I think if you go to Kickstarter and you search Spring Awakening or Deaf West, I have a feeling it'll come up. But they've already raised some
good capital.
Yeah.
Well, they're Spring Awakening. Yeah. They have awakened the masses.
They have awakened.
For the performance.
So I know you were excited about the Hedwig tour and the news that just came out about that.
No, I wasn't until now.
Oh, so you just learned the other part of it.
Yeah,
so,
I could have cared less about Darren Criss going on tour.
Oh, no, okay. I could care about that. So what are you excited about?
That Lena Hall's going on tour, but not only is Lena Hall going on tour, Lena Hall is going to play Hedwig.
Well, she's going to play Hedwig on occasion.
On occasion.
Once a week, maybe.
Yep.
So this is the Darren Criss will be taking, he's going to be taking off one show a week, and somebody else will be stepping into that role. Lena Hall will be the first person ever to play both roles.
Yeah. Yes, I know.
So this is also, she would really arguably be the first female to play that. Cisgender female to play that role.
No, she is not. Ali Sheedy.
Oh, Ali Sheedy,
because
that's
right. Because I saw the Ali Sheedy.
That's
and it's,
right.
Ali, and it, I'll tell you, Ali Sheedy was not so hot. However,
was she sheedy?
She was sheedy. But however, seeing a
I'm just talking about her last name. For God's
seeing
sake.
Seeing a cis female play the role, you look at the show in such a completely different way. I was so happy that I saw Ali Sheedy play.
And the same with when the movie. No, I'm thinking of something else. Never mind. I was thinking of Rocky Horror with Lorraine Cox.
Laverne Cox. That's. Yeah, I've got to set you the trailers, and that's something different.
Thing.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked at them. So who's seen All the Way on HBO?
I didn't get to watch it yet.
Who saw All the Way when it was here at Zach?
I was in it.
You were in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was like that. I wish we could hear it on you going, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Good times.
So I, just
good
because times. Nobody could hear it, well, I'll just say that Karen Jambone saw it on Broadway.
Yeah.
With one Bryan Cranston, I'm assuming. I don't think he ever had a replacement.
No.
I don't know.
Dark the Thursday I could go. I was
and
very
Billy
angry.
Billy Joel was there that night.
Billy Joel? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he told me he saw you.
Yeah, he chatted.
So here's the deal, folks.
He wanted me to let you know that it's my life.
Oh my God.
Go ahead with your own life, you know, just leave me alone.
Yeah, he didn't start the fire. So I know that tonight I'm either going to have a bottle of red or a bottle of white. I haven't decided.
Oh, well, you know, Captain Jack will make you whole again.
Well, when we take a break, we'll play a song for the piano man. Anyway, so we can keep going. All the Way is the HBO-produced version of the Broadway show that Bryan Cranston did. And Bradley Whitford plays Hubert Humphrey. Mm. I thought he did an awesome... I thought he was a great
Hubert Humphrey. I love Bradley Whitford. Yeah. I love that guy. I think he's one of... I don't want to say underrated, but I don't think he gets enough credit in the biz, and he has done some awesome work.
So I'm going to make a suggestion that... you know, see the show on HBO. If you don't have a subscription, borrow somebody's password and watch it, because it's worth it. It's worth it. And you get a little history lesson. It's really great to know that what Johnson did. He was really groundbreaking. You know, he was touting liberal views in a conservative Democrat world. We all say that Texas was Democrat, but that was conservative Democrats. It may as well have been Republicans back then.
Dixiecrats. Yeah. I like that.
So now, and I don't remember the name of it, but there's the sequel to All the Way that's in production now that goes from the Voting Rights Act through the Vietnam War. That's going to take the same path, and I forgot where it started with somebody other than Bryan Cranston, and then it moved with Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
So we're going to take the quiz. Y'all ready for the quiz?
Yay! Ready for the quiz.
Okay. So this is the quiz that I get on the New York Theater Guide. They ask 5 random questions, and some of them are hard, some of them easy. I'm going to say this.
What did you score this week?
I did 3 out of 5.
Okay.
I
think have to try to beat Lisa.
I'm going
to
say that you guys are going to do
collectively as a group.
I'm going to tell you right now, y'all will do better than me. So we'll see if I can read this. Oh my gosh. Okay. Who in 1969 was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature? J.B. Priestley, Harold Pinter, or Samuel Beckett?
What year? 69?
69.
Good, but Beckett or Pinter?
Pinter.
Yeah. Pinter. 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 Everybody say Pinter? Anybody?
This group-wise, Pinter.
I thought it was going to be Pinter as well.
But then I said, no,
that's too easy. So I said Beckett, but it is Pinter.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Oh, no, wrong. I said Pinter, it's Beckett.
Okay.
It's the other way. I thought Beckett was older than that. I thought he was an earlier time. Okay, Marlon Brando made his Broadway debut in which play? A Flag is Born, A Streetcar Named Desire, or I Remember Mama? This one pissed me off.
It's not what we think it is.
No, I think it's I Remember Mama.
You think it's I Remember Mama? Okay. Well, it's amazing how great minds mind speak. I said the same thing. It can't be the thing we think it is. Yeah. It was.
Yes.
It is Streetcar.
It's okay. Streetcar.
Right. Yeah.
Oh no! Darn it!
Wait, what?
It's I Remember Mama.
Nice.
There you go.
Everything opposite.
These progressive glasses.
No, she took the class. She took the quiz before she got her new glasses.
Here's a gimme. Who married Neil Simon in 1973? Marcia Mason. Well, wait. It could have been Diana Lander or Maggie Smith.
But I wish it were Maggie Smith. Yeah. I really do.
This is a freebie. I'm not going to give you multiple choice
on
this
one. Maggie
Smith
would be funny,
right?
Okay. Yeah.
A founder of the Jets falls in love with Maria, the sister of the leader of the Sharks, a rival New York gang, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. What's the show?
West Side Story.
Yeah. Okay.
Romeo and Juliet.
What does Billy...
Yes,
I'm also not going to give you the answer to this one. I'm not going to give you... Because you should know that. What does Billy Elliot want to be?
A dancer, dances.
No, not that kind of dancer. What kind of dancer does he want to be?
Ballet dancer.
Yeah. That's with Sheila. Everything is beautiful at the ballet because a dancer dances.
We're going to take a break and come back. This is a cut. It's not from Waitress. It is a song from the show Waitress, sung by its composer Sarah Bareilles. Everything changed. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, Hornsby, Austin. I'm Lisa Sheps. Nicole Shiro is here. And we're here to talk to the incredible people from the Vortex Rep and their show, Privacy Setters. Welcome. Settings.
It's about Irish setters.
I was just about to go, wait a minute.
Welcome back to the show, Heather Barfield, who is the director and sort of creator of this. It's a devised piece, but...
It is devised. It is... Born from my inspiration from the Promethean flame.
Lovely. And Nathan Portershaver, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And Karen Jambon.
Oh, listen to you.
Well, that's the easy way for me to say
it. I love it. All right.
So Nathan and Karen, y'all are performers in the show.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
So I know very little about it. Other than what I read on the website. So Heather, why don't you give folks a sort of the nickel tour or tell us what you can about the show.
Great. So the show is essentially you could call it 2 acts. The first act is a retelling adaptation of Aeschylus's Prometheus Bound.
Yes.
In which the characters in the show are made to be contemporary representations of whistleblowers, privacy rights advocates, people in sort of the digital and civil liberties field right now.
Whistleblower would not be a privacy rights advocate.
Well, let's just say...
The opposite, wouldn't it?
Let's just say that our Promethean hero has Snowden-esque qualities.
Okay. Snowden-esque. He's become a adjective.
He's a symbol, right?
He's a symbol of
where we are sort of in between digital culture, print culture, data mining, what's going on with law enforcement, hacking, FBI, looking into people's phones, right, all under the name of
national security.
Correct. And we live in sort of the post 9/11 world, in the United States in particular, but of course across the world. And there have been enormous infringements, one could say, on constitutional rights right now.
One would say.
Yes.
And now, so that's what the show looks at.
It looks at it in a highly theatrical, almost Brechtian way.
Oh my gosh. We are throwing around the words here. Brecht.
Yes. I wish there was a video cam today, though, because your facial expressions as you discuss this all are quite exciting.
They are.
I'm trying to be very calm and lower my voice.
Why bother? Nobody else to do does.
We've been working on this show since February, so it's something we've all become really passionate about.
And Heather, longer than that.
Yeah, Heather, longer than
that. You started working on it, like, it's been a year now.
Years ago. Yeah.
So starting in February, you started the process of devising the show. Nathan, tell folks what I often have to explain what a devised show is.
Yeah,
can you tell folks what that is?
It confuses people.
It's
one of those elusive terms that's different every time too.
Like moist.
So what Heather really did was first got us comfortable with each other, and then would kind of give us some assignments to read, and you know, we would soak all that information in, and we would divide into groups and come up with small vignettes or performances, come back to the group, share that. We would mostly laugh hysterically for a while and then pick the things out that were good, keep those, throw out the rest, and just kept building on that for the last few months.
So basically, a devised show then would be a situation where you're not handed a script. You're handed an idea and you run with it.
Just to clarify, I had been on several retreats at the Osage Arts Community in Missouri, wonderful people there, and I studied the text, the Greek text, pretty intensely, and wrote a majority of the script, and sort of metaphor by metaphor, lining up the Promethean tale scene by scene according to the characters that I'm putting in that are more contemporary. And I gave that to the cast, but then I got stuck. I got severely stuck at one point, and I said, I can't write this alone anymore. I need them. And that's when we really started churning out the rest of the material, and it became, bizarrely, there are four musical numbers in my show.
Oh, I love it!
Is Row, Row, Row Your Boat one of them?
No.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Okay, before we go, I'm going to take a little tangent. Karen, can you just pick... Hold on just a second. Can you pick a number between 34 and 34?
Oh, between 34 and 34?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, 34.
Okay, let's see what that is.
Hello, I'm Leroy Reams, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin, 91.7 FM.
Okay, that was Leroy Reams. I have to say...
We haven't heard that in a while.
We haven't heard it in a long time, and we'll take a quick tangent here. Leroy Reams was just a guest on either Theater People Podcast or... No, he was a guest on the, and I forgot the name of the podcast, but it was one I talked about last week. It's the musical podcast where they take in-depth looks at musicals, and they went back and they talked to Leroy Reams about all the shows he's done back since the 60s and before.
You do know that Friday was Eliza Doolittle Day, right?
Yes.
Next week. That's true. 20th May.
That's yes. true.
Well, you know what? Then what? That's why Leroy Reams was on.
All right. 34. That's exactly why.
Because that's okay. why you chose 34. You knew.
Uh-huh.
So Nathan, Karen, what are your characters? Do we play do all the actors play the same character all the time, or are we
no,
moving
stuff? No, we
play
a number around? Of different uh-huh. things. Number of different interesting characters, I might say.
Well, why would you play?
Why would you play anything else?
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And that's part of the process is, you know, what you brought to the table, and then did it make it into the final cut or not? And it was like, okay, that's your character. Go for it.
But they cool. do carry the Greek names from the yes. Prometheus myth, especially
just modernized a bit.
Modernized.
Give us an example, yeah. can you?
So, for example, Oceanos comes in to visit Prometheus, who's uh-huh. chained on the cliff. Well, my Oceanos in the show is actually played by an actor who... the instruction was really he's more like an ACL lawyer slash journalist type, which okay. would be sort of a Glenn Greenwald kind of mirroring of mm-hmm, of that. And then we've got Argos character, who is sort of the eye in the sky mm-hmm. surveillance man, because Argos has 1,000 eyes in the Greek myth, etc.
So I know it.
Yes.
My character, Hephaestus, which in the Greek mythology is the weapon maker. And now we're sort of changing that to the modern day sense, which is obviously a lot related to data science and predictive analytics
and
technology. So the my role in the show is still to develop weapons. It's just a different type of weapon.
I see. Yeah. And Karen, what about you?
Well, my first character is called Might, and that is part of the Greek mythology. And Might is one of the gods or minor gods that helps to chain up Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
So might and violence are both, and they're actually a brother and sister in Greek mythology, but here it's just might and violence. Like everything in Greek mythology is brother, sister, husband.
Sort of like the military wings.
I'm sort of a bureaucrat, a government bureaucrat.
You're the bad guy.
Spy.
I am.
So would one classify as somebody would say, hey, is this a comedy? Is this a tragedy? Is it a seriocomic? Is it tragicomic?
We made up a name, right? A tragicomic musical.
I like that. Yeah. Tragicomic musical.
A tragicomic
the subject
musical.
Is very serious, but I think a good way to approach it is the comedy.
And there's a big second act of interactive... experience.
Lovely. So the audience is just not sitting on their tails watching. They are participants.
Oh, yeah.
They want you off your tuchus.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And y'all have not opened yet, correct?
Friday
night. Exciting. And how long do y'all play?
Until, I believe, June the 18th.
You believe correctly, because that's what I have written here.
Thank goodness.
Is there any... So we're actually running out of time, but I want to... Is there anything else you want to highlight? Is there any part of the team that you want to talk about? Set lights,
I would just
costumes,
like to thank,
other actors.
You know, Bonnie Cullum and Vortex have been incredibly supportive. It's a huge project. There's a lot of moving parts to it, and they have been more than patient and wonderful giving us the opportunity to do it here. It's almost like site-specific, theatrical, interactive, all the things most producers hate. So thank you.
Okay,
well,
I have
put a great cast together, too. This has been amazing to collaborate
amazing
with these
cast,
people.
Amazing cast, amazing ensemble really of artists.
Is this not a Vortex production?
It is.
So I was about, I was all ready to write.
I thought I had bad information.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Where can folks go to get more information about the show?
VortexRep.org.
VortexRep.org. Well, thank you so, so very much.
And thank you.
And I hope y'all can stick around, or some of you can stick around to join us backstage.
Sure. Yes.
Okay, all that was Heather Barfield, Karen Jambone, and Nathan Portershaver, all with Vortex Rep's production of Privacy Settings from the 27th of May through June 18th. For more information, VortexRep.org.
Anyone can whistle, that's what they say.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Nicole Shiro and Lisa. Nicole is doing a great job at the controls again today.
Making magic happen over here in my corner.
Mazel tov, as we say in the industry.
Woo!
You know, I did not do my local homework today. Do you have anything that you want to highlight?
Well, yes, I do, because it's the last weekend for the Macbeth in the Park.
Macbeth in the Park. Has anybody gone to see that yet?
And there's been some lovely cooling nights.
I've been in rehearsal.
Oh, whatever.
No. You can't just cancel rehearsal?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah, talk to our director. He's really mean.
For Mark Puhey, I might.
Mark Puhey and the Helen Marino.
And poor Austin Shakespeare. I mean, they've been dealing with some weather.
Wackadoodle weather. Yeah. But you know what? They still have had, most shows have really been going on, and it's been lovely, cool evenings. We've had, so
that's
it's
cool.
The, you know.
So this is the last night to go out to the park, and I think that I have not missed a Shakespeare, and so maybe I'm going to have to try to make a point to get out there. I do miss the summer musical every year because it's just too bloody hot.
I'm
a big wimp, but I always go out to see Shakespeare. It's not the huge crowds that the musical gets, so it's very comfortable as an audience member, and you get to get a little, you get to be edumacated, as I like to say.
Well, you know, the other thing going on this weekend is you were fascinated by this when it was in London, but Andrew Lloyd Webber's Wizard of Oz is at the Long Center this
weekend.
Oh,
thank you for bringing that up. Yes, and I want to see this. So this is something I really want to see, and I wanted to get them on the show, but I wanted to have Clybourne Park instead. So I had Clybourne Park, Wizard of Oz, so I chose Clybourne Park.
Nice.
But this is the Wizard, the new Wizard of what?
I completely believe that. That's what happened.
It is exactly what happened.
She did tell them all to go home earlier.
Yeah, they were here.
It's true.
Outside.
This is the new Wizard of Oz with new music written by Andrew Lloyd Webber, and I've got the soundtrack. I like it.
I know, that's why I brought it up for you, Ms. Sheps.
But I love what they've done. They gave The Witch some musical numbers because The Witch doesn't have musical numbers. If you're familiar with the movie, as I am, after the Cowardly Lion song, "If I Were King of the Forest," after that song, there's no more songs. That's the last one. Oh, so the second half of the movie has no music, really, other than but that's not a song. Does everybody know what that song actually says? Because it's commercial. No, it's Oreo, Chips Ahoy. It's all commercial. It's
subliminal.
Yeah, it's
long
bad.
Before they were out, huh?
Uh-huh. So we're just going to jump right to today in theater history then.
Dun, 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 dun,
okay.
dun.
So in, hold on, let's see if I can
It's
read
a great
this.
Picture right there.
Lena Horne.
Of one Lena Horne.
But we're not going to talk about her right now. In 1978, this is the birthday of Bill Bojangles Robinson.
Oh.
Which I can play on the guitar.
Bojangles.
Yeah. He was in, amongst other things, Blackbirds of 1928, Memphis Bound, and The Hot Mikado, which I talk about on this show.
I was
quite
just
a bit.
About to say, you like that.
And
Hot
when we leave, you're making a face, Nathan. Have you not heard of The Hot Mikado?
I have never heard of
It's
Hot
an African American version of The Mikado, which, as you know, is a sexist, racist show to begin
it's
with.
Like, yeah. It's racy in the first spot. So then you switch it up and you're like, oh.
But The Hot Mikado is a black version of it. So the music is all, and you'll hear a little bit of it, which I forgot which song I chose.
He's gonna marry.
He's
yum
gonna
yum.
Marry Yum Yum, and it's you know funky versions of this music, so it's really good. Let's see. In 1939, one Ian McKellen was born.
Oh, hello, sir.
I saw him in Salieri and Amadeus, 1981. He was very good. In 1964, it's the opening night of The Subject Was Roses, which starred one Jack Albertson and one Martin Sheen. Heard of both of those.
Yeah.
Let's see.
When's the last time Martin Sheen was on stage?
I don't know, but I would vote for him if he'd run for president. 1999. Why did I say I wanted to do this? I don't know why I added this. So I'm going to... I know why. Because it's waitressy. When you went to see the show East is East, you were treated to smells of frying fish and chips. So they did smell-o-vision back then.
Yes, but did they give you... Could you buy fish and chips like you can buy the pies
I'm
at
sure
Waitress?
You can. I'm sure you can. I don't know. So other birthdays today is Hal David.
Okay.
Dixie Carter.
I love
Leslie Uggams.
I love Leslie.
Eve Ensler.
Oh, these are good ones.
Anne Hesch.
Okay.
And locally, Zach Crawford's birthday is today.
Oh,
shout
hello,
out to Zach.
Hello, Zach.
Tomorrow, I just had to bring these in, Gregory Driscoll. Kathy Rose Center, and one, Nicole Morosis.
Morosis, she's moving back.
Oh, good. Welcome back,
Nicole. The
other
Nicole is coming back. Watch out, folks.
So the new two Nicoles will be back. Oh,
we will be back in action.
We are on time. You're going to get an extra few minutes, you guys, in Clybourne Park, because we were that good.
It means people are going to call me Shiro.
I'll just talk some more.
Yes.
Yeah, Nathan's going, shut up,
yes,
Lisa.
No!
Shut up.
Turn this some more Hot Mikado.
All right, so let's listen to He's Gonna Marry Yum Yum from the Hot Mikado.
Yum Yum. Yum Yum. Yum Yum. Yum, yum.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, Hornsby Austin, with Nicole and Lisa. We are joined in the studio. Well, you know what? I'm going to reintroduce you guys in a second, but we got a text.
We got a text from Lizzie Beckham.
Lizzie Beckham.
Because we were talking about the Tonys, and she just wanted to let us know the Tonys do spin, but the base is plastic and the placard is melting off Daisy Egan. She thinks she left it in her car or something. So we just had to laugh that, can you believe that they melt and the placards come off? And so this, I guess spinning is the only exciting thing about it besides winning. Spinning and winning.
Spinning and
well,
winning.
Does anybody watch the TV show How It's Made?
Yes. Did they do the Tonys once?
They did the Grammys, and it's fascinating how they make these things. And the bases are not plastic. They're like
because they're like
crazy something or others.
The folks who make our awards for the Ameripolitan Music Awards are also the same award makers that make the Emmy. And these Ameripolitan Awards are like 10 pounds a piece. So
there you go.
I don't know.
You can go to work out.
Well,
those.
We just need to get on to the Tonys.
We do. All right. So let's jump right on to Penfold Theater Company, our good friends, I should say, at Penfold Theater Company.
The people in our neighborhood.
And co-founders and artistic directors are here. Ryan Crowder, hi.
Hello.
And Nathan Jerkins.
Hello.
Now, one of you directed this piece and one of you's in it, because that's always the case in a Penfold show.
That does tend to be. We spread it around. Anyway.
So which is which?
Yes. I directed it, Nathan, and Ryan gets to, show off his acting chops, which, we all want to see, right?
And three of our actors are here. Jarrett King.
Hello.
The incomparable Michelle Alexander.
Hello.
And somebody named Robert Matney.
Hi, folks.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy.
Clybourne Park. So I just have to say this. I probably say this every time I talk about the Bruce Norris shows. That his brother. Oh, God, I just lost his name.
Chuck.
I was just
Chuck Norris. No. John Norris. I believe that. Was an MTV VJ, very famous one at that, and was in my class at my high school, my drama class. He's a year behind me.
I think he's actually one of the last VJs. He's still hired by them, to be honest
maybe.
With you. Yeah.
And then Bruce moved to Chicago very quickly and became this rocking kick.
Yes.
Batootie.
Playwright. Yeah. Pulitzer Prize winning, and as I said, Pulitzer Prize winning Clybourne Park. Did Clybourne Park win a Pulitzer Prize, or did...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, because I know whatever the one before this one that he wrote also either may have or was up for one.
I think it was up for one, but this is the one that won.
So I will also say that, just because it's all about me, that I lived a few blocks from Clybourne Park in Chicago. So when I lived in Chicago. So I was at Wicker Park. I was at the cool park.
I was just about to say, were you Wicker?
I was Wicker. So Clybourne Park is, so tell us about it. What is this show?
So Clybourne Park, a terrifically good and celebrated play that's been performed.
TGCP we call those.
Yeah, I know what all of those letters mean individually. And
terrifically good and celebrated play.
Absolutely, it is. Been performed lots and lots of different places, but for whatever reason, no one had done it around here, which was such a shame, but it did also mean that we got to jump on it and be the people to produce it. So
yay,
I'm super excited about that. A show about race and gentrification and a lot of the troubles that come along with that. So the premise is that Act One takes place within Clybourne Park half a century ago with the family selling their house to what will be the first African-American couple to move into the neighborhood and all the hubbub around that. Act Two, then, is the very same house now being sold to the white couple moving into what is now considered a historically African-American neighborhood, and they want to bulldoze the house and build this big fancy new thing. It is, of course, sort of touching and insightful, but it's clever and it's smart and it's funny, and it feels a lot like East Austin right now. So, kind of
so
is a show we really wanted to do.
And it also has a connection to another very famous play, does it not?
Yes. So it is vaguely related to A Raisin in the Sun. And I don't know, maybe it has more connections than I give it credit for. There is a character that is in both shows.
Right.
And one of the characters in Act Two claims to be the niece of, I mean, I have no reason to doubt her veracity when she says that she's the niece of one of the main characters from A Raisin in the Sun.
Well, you know, she is a known liar.
I know, right? I get the feeling reading through it, it was like, well, it would be a tremendously good marketing point if I just say this character is the same character from that other really famous play. So that way it's like, oh, now I have connections.
And
so,
not only that, I'm related to Sidney Poitier as well.
Well done, Bruce Norris. Well,
well done. Well, all of that is to say, A Raisin in the Sun, of course, is terrifically good, but there's no reason that anyone has to know anything about A Raisin in the Sun to walk into this show and know what's going on.
And
et cetera.
Stands on its own.
Yes.
So what do so Ryan, you're a performer in the play. Let's find out what everybody's playing here.
Oh, okay. So yes.
Oh, surprise! I didn't know.
I
didn't. You had no idea.
I know. I brought this other guy, so he could do all the talking. No. Well, in the first act, I play a character named Jim, and then switch up in the second act to play Tom, which are just members of the neighborhood, kind of watching the events in this house explode.
Another strange Bruce Norris coincidence. Two three-letter names.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. I just said that. No. Jared, what about you?
Yes, I'm playing Albert in the first act and Kevin in the second act. And again, it is sort of a situation where my character in the first act is watching situation unfold with my wife, played by Michelle. And in the second act, Michelle and I are also married in both acts. And yeah, we're sort of, again, stepping in. And
now, are you the family that is selling the house in the second act?
I feel like I shouldn't answer this.
Okay.
Spoilers?
I'm making a racist assumption.
He said that with a smile.
All right, so we'll leave that to the audience and pay no attention to the racist behind the microphone. Michelle?
Yes, Michelle. I'm playing Francine in Act One, who is the maid of the family that's moving out to welcome in the family from A Raisin in the Sun. And then in Act Two, I play Lena, who is the alleged niece.
The liar.
Yeah.
I knew you played that character when I said that.
Subtlety to your characterization. That's all.
This is all going to go into your inner monologue. This is the kind of person you're playing.
I'm just kidding. But yes, I play Lena in Act Two, who's the great niece to Lena Younger from Raisin in the Sun. Yes.
And Robert Matney.
In Act One, I get to play the role of Carl, who raises concerns about whether or not the neighborhood should be integrated. And in Act Two, I play Steve, who is the fellow moving in. And in both acts, I get to be the most racist person on the stage. Yeah. So that's a dubious privilege, but it's also a fact.
I don't even. And he says that with a big grin on his face.
Which is so funny because he's the most racist person I know.
Oh my gosh, no. I'm so worried about that.
Robert Matney.
I tell you what, if I had to defend Robert Matney's honor one more time out there in the world.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you.
Well, if I didn't do it, who would?
Little cards made up. She passes them out. Robert's not that bad.
I don't know why people are saying those things. Y'all are prepared to do a scene, yes?
Yeah.
So somebody set the scene up and let's do it.
So at this point in Act Two, the group of people coming in wanting to remodel this new house are meeting with a couple members from the Neighborhood Association, and in the course of that conversation, they begin to figure out some things that had happened in the house that might have made it available way back when that perhaps the new owners didn't know about.
Great. So this is Ryan Crowder, Robert Matney, Jarrett King, and Michelle Alexander doing a scene from Penfold Theater's Clybourne Park.
I'm sorry for taking time.
No, what you said was great.
And I didn't mean to romanticize.
You didn't.
Nothing romantic about being poor.
But it was your neighborhood.
Wait, what street?
Off of Larrabee.
My parents lived on Claremont.
Y'all would have been neighbors.
But I didn't mean to make it about my personal connection to the house. It's more about the principle.
But you can't live in a principle.
You had a personal connection?
To the house? To this house?
Her aunt.
I don't want to. Let's not.
Lives here.
Wait, who?
Sort of beside the point, but yes.
Great aunt.
On my mother's side.
You don't mean here?
And this is 50 years ago.
Here in this house?
For quite some time, actually.
So, wait.
Whoa, this exact house.
So, like, you've been in this room?
I used to climb a tree in the backyard.
Wow.
Whoa.
A crepe myrtle tree.
Well, that is just bizarre.
At any rate, her great aunt, and she had to save a long time to be able to afford a house like this.
She was a domestic worker.
And a house isn't cheap.
Not here, anyway.
Here at that time?
At that time, well, when I was growing up, I really don't remember seeing a single white face in the neighborhood for pretty much my entire...
one you said.
Who?
What's his name?
Mr. Wheeler?
Mr. Wheeler.
I don't think anybody knew his first name.
He was
at the grocery store.
Bagged the groceries.
At the super... Well, back then it was Gelman's, but then they tore down Gelman's.
And that became Super Saver?
And then they tore down the Super Saver, so...
Do you know where the Whole Foods is?
Oh, yeah.
And what happened to Mr. Wheeler?
Dead, probably.
He was... You know, developmentally.
Oh, that's so sad.
Wow,
you know why that upsets me? I have a niece with Asperger's syndrome.
But given the makeup of a neighborhood at that time and the price of a home like this one, the question naturally arises as to whether it was the thing that happened here in the house, whether that in some way...
played a factor.
...in making a place like this affordable for a person of her income.
The thing?
The sad, you know.
I don't...
The tragic
thing that happened.
What thing?
Well, long time ago.
In this house?
I'm just saying that since she was one of the very first people of color.
Wait, something happened in the house?
Wait, somebody died or...
It's not important.
That we should be concerned about?
No.
Just that there'd been a family who had a son who'd been in the army.
Korea, maybe?
And, well, a few years after he came back from the war...
Killed himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Sad.
Wow.
Okay.
Which my great aunt didn't know at the time.
That is just...
But I assumed you did.
No.
That is just... Wait. And they went ahead and sold the house to...
Wow.
Without telling her that? Because nobody ever told us that.
Well, they wouldn't, would they?
50 years ago.
But legally, I mean, don't you have to tell people that?
Not if you want to sell it.
It was something like he'd come back from the army and he'd been accused of something.
They're killing people.
Innocent people.
Killing civilians.
But you don't mean like here in this very...
No. I mean, not where we're sitting.
Upstairs, wasn't it?
I mean, the version I was told was that he went upstairs.
Hanged himself.
Okay, no, I'm sorry, but that is just wrong. That is just... No, you to sell someone a house where...
What's the matter?
No, there should be a law, and I don't care how, okay? I don't want to know how he did it or in what room, because I'm sorry, that is just something that, from a legal standpoint, you should have to tell people.
It's not.
Well, it should be!
Oh, my gosh. That was wonderful. I have to tell you this. Our listening audience is really missing something here, because Jarrett and Michelle were flanked by Robert and Ryan, and they were...
All
they were just like all over these two people. I couldn't have staged that better.
No,
if
it
I
was
directed it.
It
was just...
It was
wonderful.
A great mic setup.
What a great piece. So I have to ask, was the vocalization after the Whole Foods, was that in the script, or was that directorially added?
Yeah, we added that.
It's beautiful.
You know.
It is. Yes.
Come on.
It's beautiful. So we're out of time. Where can folks... So when do you open? You haven't opened yet, right?
Tomorrow.
The sun will come out, and then Clive Warren
And you're
Park
at the Long Center.
Open.
That's right, in the
But just for 2 weeks, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so that's different from normal.
Mm-hmm.
Normal, I'll use air quotes.
Mm-hmm. But we do play almost every night. We're just dark Monday and Tuesday through June 5th. Am I getting those details right?
Where should folks go to get more information?
You can go to our website, which is penfoldtheater.org, or the Long Center's website, and we're right there on the front page. Right,
which is thelongcenter.org as well. Well, I cannot wait to see this. This one was so... And to waylay your fears, there was no competition between The Wizard of Oz and Clybourne Park.
Oh.
I still don't believe that.
That's absolutely true.
I believe Lisa.
I have been looking... Thank you, Robert. You get to come back.
He isn't so bad, is he?
But thank you all so much for being on the show. I hope all or some of you can join us backstage amongst the dumpsters.
Yes, please do.
Okay, great. Thank you. So that was Ryan Crowder, Nathan Jerkins, Robert Matney, Jarrett King, and Michelle Alexander of Penfold Theaters, Clybourne Park at the Long Center on the Rollins stage from the 26th, which is tomorrow night, to June 5th. For more information, penfoldtheater.org. And I know that Raisin in the Sun isn't like really but I had to play Raisin.
Mm-hmm. Man say, I got me a dream.
We are back.
We You're are back. To-
We are back.
Yes.
Both of us said that in unison almost.
You were saying it, and I was like, yes, we are.
I have to say real quick, like we went our last few minutes. So that's the man singing that song was Joe Morton.
Why do I know that name?
Well, you know it for several reasons. First of all, he had a big piece on him in the New York Times this week.
Okay.
He plays Kerry Washington's father in Scandal.
Yes, Papa Pope.
Papa Pope.
He can jam.
And he can totally jam. And he was in Oh Brother. He was in my show. He's a wonderful man.
I only discovered that he recently could jam. I think I came in today. I go, I didn't know Papa Pope sang when he was on Rachel Ray and he whipped out his guitar.
He's got great
Gorgeous.
Pipes. So anyway, we're out of time. We got to roll. If you're listening to the podcast, stick around for Backstage at Offstage. If you're not listening to the podcast, I ask you why.
Right.
So go to offstageonair.com, sign up. We'll send it to you every week, but you can also get us on iTunes.
You can. And when you're getting us on iTunes, you can leave a great little thing.
Yep.
Say, we're awesome.
We're awesome. So leave us some stuff and stitch us on Stitcher. We're on Stitcher. We're everywhere. Stand by for awesome modern news. Here's another interesting thing. We're going to play a song from Minnie's Boys, which is a story about the Marx Brothers, and Groucho Marx was credited with being helpful on it, but he had nothing to do with it, as it turns out.
Interesting.
And remind me to talk about Frank Hamilton, who is the PSM, the production stage manager on that, when we come back.
Okay.
This is Mama a Rainbow.
Mama a Rainbow, Mama a
Well,
sunrise,
the
Mama.
Curtain just came down on Fun Studio, the musical, the story of a graphic artist trying to make the world a better place by having a radio show in Austin, Texas, on a community radio station, but is foiled by her guests who continually talk over her.
Oh, who's writing that one? I would totally produce that show.
I think it's Bruce Norris.
Oh, good.
So joining us here backstage, we're here amongst the dumpsters backstage, actually outside the stage door, we have Heather Barfield. Hello.
Hello.
Karen Jambon.
Hello.
I just love saying that now. Jarrett King.
Hi.
And Nathan Jerkins.
Hello.
So the other people just scattered off to the winds. They were not very scary. Many of you have been back here before. Karen and Nathan, you've both. Oh, and yes. Jarrett, you have. Okay, so we're going to. Heather, you haven't been back here.
I'm a virgin.
Okay, pull that microphone close to you because I'm going to start with you.
Okay, great. Hi.
Well, we want to learn about Heather Barfield. First of all, where are you from? Are you from Austin?
I'm from Austin, Texas.
Get out.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, born and bred.
I'm sorry, Nicole just told you to get out.
Okay. Bye. Bye. See you later.
What high school?
I was at Johnston Liberal Arts Academy, but now it's Eastside Memorial High. And, of course, Johnston Liberal Arts combined with the Science Academy, and now it's LASA.
Now it's LASA. So did you do theater in high school?
I did. Thanks, Rick Garcia. You're the best.
Right, now, Rick Garcia is now at Saint something.
He's at Saint Andrew.
The one on 360. The one on Southwest Parkway.
Andrews.
That's Saint Andrews.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he was your teacher?
He absolutely was.
I wish folks could see your face. That's so great. So was that your entree into theater?
No, I actually, many, many years ago, believe it or not, I
Many took, with an I or many with an A?
Well, let's just say. When I was a little, little girl, my mother signed me up for classes at Zach Scott, and I believe Boyd Vance taught me when I was a little girl. So
Lucky Tell people here. Who Boyd Vance was in case they don't know.
Well, Boyd Vance was, I guess, an extraordinarily eclectic theater maker, educator, performer, deeply beloved by the community. Mm. Others know him much more closely than I do, right. But he was definitely somebody who brought a lot of integrity to the art of theater in Austin and truly believed in it with heart, soul, and gave a lot to the community as well.
And he really championed the African-American experience as theater locally, which has been sorely missed since his death.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you learn musicals as well? I suppose if...
I wouldn't say that I was ever in a musical theater world. I did a lot of... especially in high school, Rick Garcia, he was a fan of pretty gritty stuff. Like we did Sam Shepard. We did like, what is it? Shadowbox.
I think it was Shadowbox.
We would deal with some pretty intense. And we also did a lot of experimental, like monologues based on our angsty lives. I mean, I was doing performance art when I was 15 at Vortex even. That's when I was first introduced to Vortex Theater, when I was in high school. And
speaking of high school and experimental features, do people watch Saturday Night Live now? The current cast? Did you see the thing that was on last week with the
my friend theater told me that I have to watch this.
It was an experimental theater class of
kids.
Oh, was
it? Oh, that's hysterical.
So make sure they hit on every leftist subject you could possibly. They're more progressive than my glasses.
I mean, we do need to have a sense of humor about ourselves.
We do.
We can't laugh at it.
So did you also go to UT? Have you stayed in Austin?
Well, no, I went to NYU for film school. Then I left NYU film school. At the time, it was there was a lot of sort of, let's just say, a lot of Quentin Tarantino-inspired boy films in the 90s. And I was just like, this isn't what I want to make. And I was making these weird, experimental, Maya Darren-influenced sort of films. And I'm like, I'm going to go back home. And I came back home, got lost a little, but then went back to UT and got my undergrad in anthropology.
Of course.
And
I wouldn't have thought anything else.
Yes.
So how did you choose anthropology?
Because I'm from Austin, and I wanted to know about other worlds and cultures.
Maybe she just dug it.
This is here 7 days
That's archaeology. Yes.
But that's just it's just an odd science.
Well, it's
choose.
Actually not so far from theater. So what happened is I kept doing theater in Austin, and then I felt the urge. I'm really there's an academic in me. So there's I love learning and I love scholarship, and part of that is from my education in high school. And And I just remember, like, man, theater, anthropology, there's a whole, genre of study, I guess, discipline of study around these two, they're very closely wedded, if you will. And Richard Schechner at NYU was a big influence on sort of what I thought theater was capable of, one could say. So I applied for NYU grad school in performance studies, got accepted, and that's where I went for grad school and learned so much. It was
crazy. So you're Austin, New York.
And then I came back to Austin to get my doctorate, yeah. Okay. I worked with Jill Dolan and Charlotte Canning and
so we have to call you Dr. Barfield.
Well,
Karen's like nodding. Yes, you better, because Heather will.
They're proud of me.
Yeah, I remember that long ago that you got your doctorate, right?
2012, yeah. I finished.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. When were you at NYU for grad school?
2000. Well, the year after 9/11, actually.
Oh.
2002 is when I went. So it was a very, very interesting time to be in New York.
Yes.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And downtown.
I lived in East Village. Very expensive. I'm still paying on it, but
I lived in a room with four girls for 8 years in the West Village, and people are like, "What?" I'm like, "Well, I live in the West Village. There are four of us in a room, and we each have a corner and a set of bunk beds."
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and two were performance artists from Sweden.
Oh, fantastic!
It's a very fascinating room.
But you wouldn't trade it for the world, would you?
No.
Yeah, me either.
No, not at all.
For the world?
Yes.
No, I wouldn't.
No, that experience of living in Manhattan, living in New York, and especially, when we're younger, it hardens you, and it also softens you at the same time in a strange way.
So, I mean, there's a lot of us here that are Northeasters. Jared, did you live in the Northeast ever?
No.
Nathan? Okay, so, well, we're not going to really speak to you then.
That's okay.
That is okay.
They think snow's a four-letter word.
Snow. And you told us where you grew up, Jared, but I don't remember.
I grew up in Austin. I was born in Houston, in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, okay.
And I was born in Houston, but yeah, I've been here since I was four.
What's the favorite show you've ever done?
Ooh, man.
Clyburn Park.
Yeah.
I did not ask for the most recent show you've done.
I did a lot of shows when I was an undergrad at St. Edward's, and those were certainly memorable because they were among all of my friends. Like, everyone in the cast is your friend that you've been in class with and you've cried with and bonded with. So those are have a very special place in my heart. But this year has been great. Been lucky to do some great shows this year.
Did She Loves Me, didn't you?
I just did She Loves Me at St. Ed's, and before that I did Top Dog Underdog, which was self-produced.
Yeah.
This has been
That was the last time you were on this show.
Yes, it was.
Top Dog Underdog.
Yeah, me and Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this has been a good year.
So the question, Karen, you don't have a microphone. Lincoln. Oh, Heather, someone.
I said
whoever
Booth,
said that
Booth
was
or Lincoln.
I was Lincoln. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, had a right? Beard.
Dude, he had a beard and a stovetop hat.
He looked great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did not get to see it. I really wanted
that's
to.
Okay. Yeah.
Am I forgiven?
I got it. Yeah, yes. We have it on bootleg. You know, I can give you.
Do you? Yeah, I want to see
have
it.
A screening.
No, that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. So what do we not know about you, Jarrett, that you want to talk about here backstage? What would people be surprised to learn about you? And keep it clean. Well, you don't have to. Go ahead. Make it dirty.
Well, you know, a lot of people know this, but I do improv around town. You know this. We talked at length about this, but I have been doing it for about a year. But you know, I think what a lot of people don't realize about me is I'm actually very shy. I'm a total introvert.
I would have never ever thought that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you are quick to give a hug right away when
I love the hugs. I'm all about the hugs. I work at St. Ed's, and so I have like lots of students that need
I did
hugs
not know you worked at St. Ed's. I may have known that, but I've chosen that to forget it. What do you do there?
Totally fine. I'm the administrative coordinator for the theater department.
That's awesome. Right. I did know that. Yes. Mm-hmm. It all came crushing back to me.
Yeah.
That's good. And so you're working with Michelle and the gang over there. That's
absolutely.
Awesome sauce, as we like to say. Yeah. So we don't know that you're painfully shy. Are you painfully shy or just shy?
I wouldn't say it's painful. Yeah. It is just like I'm a total introvert in the sense that like I recharge by being alone and you know being with myself.
Well, so. I have learned recently, and people will be surprised to know that I have discovered that I myself am an introvert. But introvert does not mean you're not gregarious.
Correct. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very well said, Lisa.
Yes. So that's it was a painful discovery for me because I never thought I was. Karen's an introvert, aren't you, Karen?
I am. A little bit. Yep.
Excuse me.
Lisa
has
her cell phone on now.
Did you know that Jesus lived here?
Good morning.
That's work. My job is blowing up right now. I've got like 700 emails. Sorry. So what do we not know about Karen Jambone?
Karen Jambone.
What? Say it, Heather.
Say Karen Jambone.
Heather wanted to say something.
All right. That
okay, she says no.
My very first play outside of just little stuff that I would put on at my church choir was at Archbishop Blank Girls High School, and I played Handsome Harry in Belle of the West.
Oh.
I love it.
Was that, that where was that? Was that in?
That was in, well, it's a suburb of New Orleans, Gretna, Louisiana. Mm-hmm.
At what age were you there?
Well, I was a freshman, so I guess I was, 13 or something like that.
Did you grow up there?
Yeah.
Why did I think you grew up in the Northeast?
Well, we lived in New York for a long time.
Okay.
And I really still consider New York home.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, but
I never associated Louisiana roots with you.
Yeah,
so
I
worked
the East. No offense, but I worked very hard to put it in my past.
Jambon.
Jambon. Jambon. So is your family Creole, French?
For whatever I know. I mean, I think they were driven out of France.
Do you like reading Anne Rice?
I did. I read it. Then I got
did
tired
really
of her.
Did you really just ask that? Because
that's
hilarious.
What's wrong with that? It's a valid question.
Then I got bored. I thought, oh my God, it's the same thing over and over again.
But it's not.
I'm sorry. I got bored with it. I read about three of them. I slogged through them, and they were good.
You just made Anne Rice angry. She's not going to tune in anymore.
She's never
going to
come on the show now.
She may. Well, I'll call
her. It'll be the musical. The
She's
Vampire
calling
Lestat.
Sydney Lucas right now and telling her not to listen to those ladies.
I will call her. Yeah. Have you ever done musicals, Karen? Do you do musicals?
I did musicals for a while. And I was part in New Orleans. I worked with Nord Theater, which was New Orleans Recreation Department. And so we did like By Jupiter and some original things called Lamora of the Islands and that kind of thing. So I did musicals for a while. And mostly, though, last few years I've done a lot of directing.
Yes, you have.
Yeah.
And here on this show, you've been here more as a director than a performer.
Yes, I have.
And I think the last thing I saw you perform in was the Lockerbie show.
Oh, my gosh. That was
I think that was the last
ago.
One I saw
it
you
was
perform
great,
in.
Because I had to do a Scottish accent. Sure.
I actually enjoyed that show.
That was interesting.
Who directed it?
That was Eric Porter who directed that. And now he's living in...
He's not here anymore.
Houston.
Yeah.
He's in Houston.
I miss him, right?
Yeah. We just like this time last year, Jenny and I did the New Electric Ballroom. We were in that.
That's right. No, you were here on the show for that too.
Yeah, we were in that.
That's right. And I did not get to see it, but I saw the pictures were great.
Yeah. That was fun.
How fun would it be to
have my family?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, and
what's next on the horizon for you?
She's writing a musical.
I'm writing a musical. No,
about me.
I'm not sure right now. I've been asked by another group to direct a play, and I'm kind of said I'd get back to them. And then I'm probably doing a show called Miss Mannerly for different stages. That'll be next in 2017. And I'm not sure what else. Whenever it comes my way, you know, I'm cool. Open.
Awesome. So you heard that here first, that Karen Jambone is open.
But I'm interested. And her number is 346. I'm interested in doing more acting these days, too. I'm, you know, just because it's...
Well, you can come over in my living room, right. And I'll set up a whole stuff.
That'd
we can
cool.
Rock band during intermission.
That'd be cool. All right.
I like that. Mm-hmm. You can do the rock band the musical.
Oh, I totally. Jambone.
So Nathan, how goes it with you?
Things are terribly good.
What?
Wonderfully good.
Oh, I thought you said something different, and I had to. I went.
No.
This is a very Scooby-Doo of you.
That's right.
I know we don't like to talk about people's projects. We want to hear more about the people, but I do want to talk a little bit about the black box that Penfold is putting together,
which
with
is
the city
much
of
more
Round
interesting
Rock.
Than I am. So
I doubt,
yes,
I please. Doubt that very seriously, but we are. We down here in the real city are very excited about what's happening up there in Round Rock.
No, I get it. Which is to say, this whole area, I know I don't have to explain to anyone in this room what a venue shortage we live in, right?
Indeed.
And, you know, thank you to everyone, Lisa, trying to help get us through that. I know. On Penfold's end of things, we have... For years and years, it was kind of the sort of long-term goal of Penfold, saying that the whole Austin area, the population has just exploded. Mm. And while all of the arts organizations are growing, they're being vastly outpaced by just the sheer number of people moving to town. And the majority of those people end up moving north of town, because guess what? That's where you can get a place.
True.
So
the outer laying counties are growing quicker than Travis.
Well,
so,
according to the Texas State Office of Demographers, something or other. I know there's
I'm
probably
on the,
an
I'm on their
name.
Newsletter.
Oh, that's great. No, I looked it up. It's anticipated that sometime in the 2030s that Williamson County will likely have more people than Travis.
Yes.
So the goal is to drop something in the middle of all of those people. So for years and years and years since Penfold started, we've been doing. About half of our shows down here in Austin, where there are facilities, there are venues we can rent, we can put up an honest-to-goodness show. And then the other half, we've been doing free shows in the park in band shells, and we shoehorned a show into the back of the library, and we found this event center or that barn where we can do really interesting stuff that you do in non-traditional spaces. But ultimately, trying to build an audience in a place that... Perhaps it didn't used to have an audience, but it does now, right? So after years of investing in that and making friends at the city, and sure, we'll host the whatever thing you want us to... Okay, so we're making friends, and
there's
after,
no business like show business.
I know, right? So a thing that happened is the city of Round Rock... was shuffling around where they were going to house their different offices and where this or that department was going to be. And in all of that shuffle, there were a couple underutilized spaces, right? And we were able to sort of tap some people on the shoulder and say, what if you just like left it empty and, you know, somebody could put a theater in there, right?
Somebody.
I suppose kind of our shock, I realize we've been working for it, but it's always surprising when things actually work out, right? They said, you know, that's a really good idea. I mean, we're doing this whole downtown thing, and we kind of already have this building that's sort of underutilized anyway. We'll, you know, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. So we'll even help with some of the renovation costs, which is crazy.
Wow.
So the city council has publicly announced, I'm not spoiling anything for anybody,
right.
That part of one of their downtown buildings, a couple blocks from the water tower that you see driving by 35, they are going to convert into into a little black box theater, 100, 110, 120 seats. An architect is still sort of working on that. And they have also said that they are interested in Penfold curating their space for them.
Awesome.
Again, these are all things the city has said publicly. So,
well, we are.
They have a nice release up on the Round Rock City's website.
Yes, they do.
I think from February that really kind of explains everything in the center and where it's going. And
so it's really exciting. And talking to people around town, I mean, it ultimately comes. It's something that I would love some of the other smaller cities around here. And in fact, Austin itself, like, you've got real estate sitting around, and we know what spaces can be made into theaters and made into really interesting, really great theaters if you just let us do it. And I realize, like, everyone's clamoring for space in Austin, and Austin's just packed full. But, you know, you give us the slightest opportunity, and we can create some really magical things.
We got a field of dreams here, folks.
That's right.
And we want to build it so they come.
Well, that is awesome. And we are thrilled. I have not heard anybody that says, oh, I don't like that's happening.
No.
Everybody is thrilled.
No,
it's
totally great. Excited.
So that's great. We've always said that this is a area that needs to be improved all through the metropolitan area.
That's true.
Round Rock needs it as much as we do. And
absolutely.
Central Texas, baby.
That's right. Yeah. And we are out of town here. Out of town. We're out of time here backstage. Thank you guys for joining us back here.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll see you next time.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Bye. Bye. Ciao, Alessio.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay. How do I stop this crazy?